Hey, Sal.
Hank, what's going on? We haven't worked a case in years.
I just bought my car at Carvana, and it was so easy. Too easy.
Think something's up?
You tell me. They got thousands of options.
Mm-hmm.
Found a great car at a great price.
Uh-huh.
And it got delivered the next day.
It sounds like Carvana just makes it easy to buy your car, Hank.
Yeah, you're right. Case closed.
Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
Hello, and welcome to episode 236 of The Ethical Life, a weekly podcast that explores the intersection of ethics and modern life. I'm Scott Rada, a digital strategist with Lee Enterprises, and I'm joined, as always, by Rick Kite, who is head of the Ethics Institute at Viterbo University in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Scott.
In a recent column, you reflect on something most of us heard pretty often growing up, the words, pay attention. For you, that phrase carried a certain resistance, the sense that someone else was claiming authority over your inner life. Whether it was a coach, a teacher, or a parent, someone else was deciding what deserved space in your mind. Today, that command often doesn't come from the front of a classroom. Rather, it comes from our phones or our watches and breaking news alerts, streaming platforms, social media feeds, all things designed to hold us as long as possible. But, I'd argue, not everyone resents being guided. Some people are perfectly comfortable letting others decide what to watch, follow, or even care about, and in a world overflowing with options, for some, that might even feel like relief. So, Rick, let's start here. In an age where everything competes for our focus, who really owns our attention, and do we have a moral obligation to direct it in certain ways?
I'm not sure that very many of us really don't mind at all if other people are controlling what's in our minds. Maybe there's a lot of resignation to it, that that's just the way it is. And I'm sure there's some people growing up today never experience any other kind of world. But I think for at least many of us, we really, really dislike the idea that we can't control what's in our own minds. And it seems like we're losing something, like we're losing control of our lives in a way, but it's so gradual. But we do get a sense once in a while that this is what's happened.
And you sensed this really early. And that's what struck me as unusual, because, and we'll link to your column, but I think all of us remember the phrase pay attention from teachers or parents. But that really struck you a little differently than most kids.
It struck me early. And I must have been a kid that was daydreaming a lot, because I just remember it happening. But then also, why do I have to pay attention to you? Because sometimes, and I write about this, sometimes that was good. You know, I remember my grandmother telling me to pay attention to how deep I was planting the carrot seeds, you know, when we were planting a garden, you know. And I think it's good to remind people, you should focus on what you're doing if you're doing something important. But lots of times, you know, I just thought, adults didn't like the fact that I was just looking off into space or something, and they just wanted to bring me back to the present. And I thought, why? What are we doing now that's so important that I can't be thinking about what I want to think about?
I'll ask this question. It's probably almost impossible to answer, but you the way I picture this is that you were I'll pick the age of 10, but I mean maybe a few years either side of that, is that you were sort of doing these things, thinking about things, you say staring off into space, and adults were often redirecting you into something that was more in the here and now. I wonder, though, would 10-year-old Rick Kite have been as likely to do that in a world today where there's very few of us who spend time staring off into space? If we have 3 minutes where we're waiting for our dentist appointment, we're almost instinctively trained to grab our phone and check the latest news or check an email or see what the latest status update is on Instagram. All these things that we do, we just don't get lost in those moments like you and many other kids back then did.
Yeah, that's and that's an issue. I find that I myself don't do that nearly as much because I've got the phone. I just like anybody else. I carry it with me and I can, you know, when I have a few minutes, I can look something up. I can check my emails and catch up on a little bit of work if I just, you know, like 5 spare minutes. And then I can go home. And if I'm a little bit bored, I can just turn on the TV and there's all kinds of things to watch. And so.
So I want to draw that out. But I want to draw that out. So. You as a kid were consciously thinking to the authorities in your life that, hey, I'll pay attention to what I want to pay attention to. But as an adult who maybe instinctively reaches in your pocket for your phone when you have a spare 5 minutes sometimes, do you also like want to tell that to your phone too? Like, hey, you know, I don't want this addiction.
Yeah. So this is the problem. We have the illusion of control over what's in our own minds when we have a device and we can turn it on and off.
There's limitless apps we can go to.
Yeah. But they aren't really limitless. And most of the apps are governed by algorithms that are feeding us kinds of information that we've talked about this plenty of other times. So we don't really have the control we think. And over time, we develop less and less autonomy, less control over where and how we direct our attention. And that's when I talk about feeling like we've lost something, I feel like I've lost a certain kind of control over my own thoughts that I used to have. And I think that in a way was kind of hard won. It's hard to develop a kind of discipline of thinking clearly about things. And I think with this attention economy that we're in right now, I've given it away, and I think we're all becoming accustomed to it, and I'm not sure that's such a good thing.
I want to talk about grocery stores for a moment, and here's why. I made the point earlier, I think you were a little skeptical of that. I think I said some people like being told what to watch, follow, or care about. And I won't name the names, because most people listening to this show are not familiar with the grocery stores in our town. But there is one really, really big grocery store in our city that is probably like double the size of like any big grocery store. It's just massive. And I don't go there all the time, but why I do sometimes like going there is that if I want to buy, let's say, a jar of salsa, you know, if I go to a regular grocery store, you might, like, setting aside like the different sizes, you might have like a dozen varieties, like medium, mild, hot. Couple different brands, mostly things you've heard of, and you pick the one that maybe is on sale or the label catches your eye. But you go to this one store that's like so much bigger, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. You go there and there could be 75 jars of salsa, most that you've never heard of, and in flavors that you could like, wow, that's something I didn't know existed. And I was talking to, and this is going to make me sound like a boring person, but I was talking to a friend the other day, and we were talking about local grocery stores, and I said, where do you often shop? And he said he often shops at Aldi, which is a store that many people are familiar with and we have here. And I said, oh, yeah, I mean, Aldi's a perfectly fine store, but I prefer going to this other store, which compared to an Aldi is like 4 or 5 times bigger than an Aldi. And he said, oh, I don't like going there. I said, why? They have good prices. They have, you know, they have everything you'd ever need. He's like, yeah, there's too many choices. I don't want to have 75 choices of salsa. I do wonder sometimes that we live in a world that is so complicated and has so many apparent choices we can make, how we spend our attention, how we spend our time, that I think for some people, some people like me love that. I mean, I think 75 choices of salsa is great, but like my friend, he's like, yeah, give me 3.
That used to be referred to as the Baskin-Robbins problem, where like you'd have a... You have so many choices of ice cream.
31.
It would take them a long time to make up their mind. But then they wouldn't be as happy with their ultimate choice because they're always thinking, well, I could have tried that other one. And whereas if you got, you know, chocolate and vanilla, you're pretty sure you like one or the other and you're going to just be happy with it. And you're not going to give it any more thought. And it actually turned out in studies, people who had many fewer choices were happier with their choice than people had a wide variety of them. And so we do run into that problem in this digital media world. We also have the problem that I'm even more concerned about is the skill of directing one's attention for oneself. And that's different than choosing from a variety of things which I will watch or listen to. Being self-directed in how one's attention goes out into the world is a very different sort of thing. And that's I think what I resented as a child, is being called back into like somebody else to determine this is what you're going to pay attention to, this is what you're going to look at. And I want to say, like, but like, my mind's my own mind. If I want to think about something that you don't know what it is and don't understand, I'm fine doing that.
No, I want to press on that a little bit though. So if I told you, I'm making up people here now, but if I told you I have two friends, one friend who, every weekend he has off, he's out in nature on long walks, enjoying the beauty of nature, no matter the season, and really appreciates that and finds that to be a great escape for him, and really is just, and really is at peace when that's the place he feels most at peace. And then I have another friend, hypothetically, who I say knows more than probably almost anyone around about fashion trends on TikTok. And that's, and you wouldn't believe how much time he spends on TikTok, but he knows the latest fashion, and he'll know things before almost anybody else, and will tell me what's going to be in stores, if I cared, about, you know, trends that are hitting before anybody else. And he just has this immense interest in watching these thousands of vertical videos and following these creators that just talk nothing about fashion trends. And I said to you, which of these people do you want to spend the weekend with? What would you say? That's all you know.
If that's all I know about them, I would choose the one who's spending time in nature.
Yeah, yeah. And you probably, the two of you would probably have a nice time out together in nature.
Yeah, but not everybody would choose that person.
Sure, but I guess I'm saying, but I guess it sounds like, though, that is it okay to judge people's ways they choose to devote their attention to things? Because
it's not judging the sense of moral approval or disapproval, but it is judging. We sometimes use the word just judge to mean evaluate.
Yeah.
To evaluate between different options. And I think like spending one's time in nature is a better way to spend one's time, better one's attention, because it's connected with the real world. And the TikTok video and stuff, this is all ephemeral. This is all make-believe
fashion
stuff.
Fashion trends are nothing but ephemeral.
Right, yeah. And it's not substantial. It doesn't connect you with the real world. And there's, it's okay to spend a little bit of time disconnected with the world in that way. And I think a lot of us do that. We might read fiction watch TV shows that are fiction. But you need some connection with the real world. This is why, somebody that I met recently who just spends a lot of time gaming, mm-hmm. but has no other interests and nothing else to talk about. Like that's a real problem. You know, like there's and it's going to, I think, lead to real unhappiness at some point in this person's life, because you can only live so long disconnected from the world. And so I would make a judgment in that sense. I think it's an evaluation of like, who's living a better life, in the sense of not like, do I approve of it or not, just which life is going to be more satisfying.
And then I'll introduce you to my third friend.
I have a lot of friends.
But this, so friend one is really interested and involved in nature. Two, fashion trends on TikTok. Three, nothing catches this person's interest. He's kind of unreflective about life. You asked him, you try to draw out a conversation. He doesn't seem to have any interests. I mean, clearly that's like the worst of the three, right? Is somebody who just seems to be doesn't really choose to pay attention to anything.
Yeah, and that's the worst condition of the three. Because even the person who's paying attention not to fashion trends on TikTok is actually engaging with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using their minds and they're thinking critically about different things, right? Yeah, and then the person who's is not in, you know, not engaged with anything because they have a merely passive relationship to the world. And their attention isn't going out toward something. It's not being directed by them. You mentioned this. I had a really discouraging day today. I spent some time speaking to a group, and it was just like, there was a lot of different parts of the day. But for one part of it, I was talking to this small group of people that I could not engage at all. And, you know, different kinds of questions. I speak to groups all the time, and I know what kinds of questions will get people going, and I'll introduce questions where they to talk to one another. And I had this one small, a number of different groups in the room, small tables, and had them talking about things at their tables. I had this one table that would not talk to each other. And it wasn't that they didn't like each other. They, you know, I would go up and I would like purposefully engage them individually. They're perfectly, you know, like compliant with and like answering questions that I had and things. But they had no initiative and no engagement. And I think we're seeing more of this right now in a world in which there's so much entertainment that it is possible to go through much of life being a passive observer.
Or I mean, and maybe I'm drawing too, I'm hanging on to my analogy earlier too tightly, but it's like the person who goes to the store and sees 75 kinds of salsa and is like, I don't know what to choose, and walks away.
It could be. Yeah. Yeah. But this is like, it was so discouraging because I was like, I was feeling bad for them. Like how do you get through life without taking some initiative to kind of put yourself into, like, to inquire about things, like, what's interesting, what's not, to be sitting, like, in a room where you've got these other people around you. And
these people chose to come here.
Yeah, and people are interesting. I mean, you ask some questions about how they grew up and, you know, like, what they've done in their life, all these things. Most people have pretty interesting stories, and there was none of that. So that's who I imagined. You said the person who doesn't engage at all. I was thinking, yeah, I just spent some time with people like this. And there is a kind of judgment. I'm not saying they're not bad people, but they're like, it's hard to imagine that being a satisfying kind of life where you don't actively direct your attention towards other people and certain features of the world.
I think we are both just old enough to remember a time where, at least in this country, Americans' attention was really directed at many fewer things, at least culturally. I mean, you had many fewer TV stations. Everybody watched the same two or three news channels to get their information. The local news ratings were significantly higher than they are now. You know, newspapers, everybody, you know, seemed to read the local paper in their city. I mean, there were, and TV shows, I mean, there were, you know, you had to see, actually, first of all, you had to watch it when it was on, which is like weird to think about actually now, but then you'd all have something to talk about the next day. Like, you know, think of shows like Dallas and these, I mean, Seinfeld even, which was like not that crazy long ago. Like, I remember the finale was out and that was like a really big deal. And so like you have these things that people would bring people together and have these national conversations. We all know that culture is so fragmented now, that's tougher to do. I think one thing that is still probably that connective tissue, though, in a way, is like still the news of the day. And, you know, you may get your news from a different place than I do, but still, I think there's some expectation, I guess, that people have a general awareness of what's going on in, unfortunately, not enough in their city, but certainly in their nation. I say all that because I think that some people almost feel like there is a pressure, I guess, to keep up with the news, even when they don't want to, because they're just like sort of afraid, like, what if they're asked their opinion about something? And I just wonder if there is this sort of pressure to pay attention to things in that way, just because it is one of the few things that connects us all. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, it does. And I think one of the things about missing these like cultural touchstones, whether it's TV shows or novels or movies, music, that at one point in our culture, just about everybody knew, it gave us things to talk about.
Yeah.
It also gave us examples to illustrate when we're thinking about kinds of behavior, or we want to compare one thing to another thing. We'd have these common touch points. We could say that, like, well, I have this goofy friend, and like he acts kind of like Gilligan. Everybody would know who that is, even if they didn't watch Gilligan's Island, they would know the character. So we lose a lot of ability to talk about things with common references. But there is that still, I think, that expectation that you keep up with certain things in the news. I think that's good. I think it's good that, and if some people feel that as pressure, well, so be it. But like you, especially when you live in a democracy, representative democracy, we have some obligation to keep up. Now, that doesn't mean keep up with all the trivial stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes it's hard to weed out the trivial stuff from the important things, but we should be paying attention to the important things. Like if you're not keeping up with what's going on with our conflict right now with Iran, and not necessarily in detail, but in general, what's going on with both with our government, with other world governments in this conflict, you should be worried about somebody asking you questions and you knowing nothing about that.
I agree with you halfway. I think it's important to like know what's going on. I think I agree with all that. I'm less sure though that you have to like have a strongly held opinion about it.
No, I don't think you have to.
Okay. Okay.
No. I'll say something about the war. We don't have a political podcast, I know, but mm-hmm. but I distinguish between the means and the ends of the war. The ends might be worthwhile. I don't know enough.
Trying to topple the Iranian government.
Yeah, and doing the strikes at this time, and I don't know enough about like what our security intelligence agencies have said to the president and to others in government. I'm not privy to that, so I don't know if this is appropriate or not. Why the timing of now? But I'm quite certain that it's unconstitutional, that it shouldn't have been done in this way, and that if we're going to war, it should be a declaration by Congress, and our Constitution gives that kind of authority. So I'm perfectly happy to admit there's other things I don't know. Like if I were to ask, well, should Congress give its approval? Like, I don't know. Like this, that's one of the reasons I want Congress to do it, so that they can look into it.
And debate it,
and then give us some rationale so that there are clear goals and expectations, which most Americans don't think we have. You need to keep up enough with things to have a general opinion, but that doesn't mean you have to have definite opinions about whether you agree or disagree.
You write in your column, you said that attention helps form the soul. Is that right? And if so, what did you mean by that?
Well, our attention, this is what we look at, what our minds focus on. And attention away, giving our attention to something is an act of love. It's where our desire moves in the direction of something. And this is what the soul, love is what shapes the soul. It's Our very identity is made up of that in the world that we reach out to, and that comes in a way to both inform us and I think constitute us in a way. Like I am made up of my knowledge, my relationships, the way I'm positioned in the world in relation to other people and other things. And much of this is a result of my attention, like who I give my attention to. And so that's what I mean by the soul is formed by attention. I don't like this. The modern ways in which we talk about identity are really superficial. Identity is not just like my desires internal. My identity is like where my interests lie very broadly, both in then where I come from. I'm not expressing this very well, but like identity is a part of like how we have a presence out in the world. And that presence out in the world comes from all the different ways in which we direct our attention.
And you a couple things. One, you said attention helps form the soul. You also said you have a hard time necessarily putting this into words that you weren't expressing as clearly as maybe you hoped. But then I remember we did a whole show at the beginning of the year, at the end of last year. I don't know, several months ago, whatever it was.
Yeah.
About the soul.
About 3 months ago.
About three months ago, because it was part of that series that you were, that lecture series you were doing. And I remember something you said was that there's so little like scholarship and material written about the soul. And I think that is just because it's so inherently, I don't want to say mysterious, is probably not, but it does sort of have this unexplainable quality a little bit to it, right?
Let me put it this way. The soul, that is me, is a subject. So it's not an object. It's not something that I look at, that I can study. This is why it's very hard to write about the soul, because here we are sitting here in this room where we've got all these objects and we're sitting at these tables, we're sitting on chairs. We can look at them, we can study them, we can measure them, we can do all these things. The soul isn't something that can be looked at and studied and measured in that way. And so it's unknowable by science, like none of the ways in which we know things through science, which causes some people to think like, well, it doesn't even exist because you can't even know what it is. But it is what knows.
And most people, like, there's not a lot of people who think we don't have souls. So this isn't like a controversial opinion.
Well, no, and especially if you say, well, the soul is the subject, it is the I, it is that which knows. Well, then of course, like, it's not that we have souls, we are souls, right? Mm-hmm. But then I think it's easier to see, well, what do I mean by that, like, attention shapes the soul? If the soul is the subject, is that which knows. Attention is the process of knowing, of looking, and inquiring. And so that is the very act that brings the soul into being, this act of knowing, of inquiring, of moving out into the world. That's what the soul is. And that's what I mean by attention constitutes the soul.
Maybe what you just got done saying was what 10-year-old Rick Kite was thinking about when he was staring off into space and the teacher came over. You were contemplating your soul, Rick, and the teacher wanted you to do arithmetic.
I know you're saying this as a joke, but in some way, I think you're probably right, that I had some sense. It's like that this is a violation of who I am. Like, this is who I am. I'm thinking about this other thing. And for me, at the moment, it happens to be really important. And this somebody is calling me back for something trivial. Now, I want to distinguish, like, sometimes I'm being called back to something that we are doing together that's really important and that I have to pay attention to, that was okay. And even if I, like, it's interrupting me, like if my grandpa's calling my attention back and say, look out, the bobber's gone under and I need to set the hook, that's all right. And I think that's an appropriate calling back. And I think, like, children need a lot of this. They need a lot of direction and redirection. In some ways, where we direct our attention is really important. That constitutes like who we are, and learning how to do that well and do it responsibly and doing it in a way that allows us to live a flourishing life, that's the most important thing we ever do.
We end each show by tackling an ethical dilemma, and Rick, here is my question for you, and it is related to the topic we've discussed on today's show so far. So we're going to say it's springtime, which we hope is not too terribly far away, and you're camping in one of your favorite scenic spots, somewhere you truly love being. At some point, you pull out your phone for a couple of minutes to check the weather forecast. as you look at your screen, someone walking by makes a comment about how disappointing it is to see people on their phones instead of appreciating nature. And this irritates you. You value the outdoors deeply, and you were only on your phone briefly. Are those passersby wrong to judge how you spent those couple of minutes? And probably more importantly, do you owe that stranger an explanation, or do you just let it go?
You know, that's when I first read this, I was thinking, well, no, they're just making a premature judgment. They're just making an assumption about you, and yeah, they shouldn't make that kind of judgment. But this is actually a more complex situation than I was thinking, because, like, why are you pulling out your phone at that time to look at the grocery store? Are you pulling it out because you're
coming, the weather forecast,
or the weather forecast, or, like, whatever it is, like, whether it's you're looking at a map or you're looking at the weather, like, do you really need to?
Unless there's like winds whirling around and storm sirens going off.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, like, you're about to set off, you're going to go hiking down a trail, and you're wondering whether you should take a raincoat with you, or something like that. I can see, like, there's times where you should. But we check the weather. I'll speak for myself. I check the weather app a lot more than I need to. And just because, like, because it's right there and it's convenient, and I'm just kind of curious. I'm looking at my phone all the time because I'm just kind of curious about something, and I don't really need to. And if I'm somewhere, like, in a beautiful setting and outdoors, yeah, I shouldn't be doing that. And if somebody walks by and sees me and I feel a little bit guilty about pulling out my phone, it's probably because I should feel guilty about it, because I'm it kind of caught me and betrayed my own weakness in not putting it away. I should have, like, left it in the car or something. What I'm saying is, maybe they're right to make that judgment. Maybe they're completely wrong. Maybe my first impression was wrong, because you have a very good reason for checking the weather app.
They don't know what you're looking at, obviously. I mean, they're just guessing, right?
And it is, it's not that uncommon now to be hiking somewhere and for people to look at their phones. For one reason, that's how most people keep their maps.
And cameras.
And their cameras. And so they're pulling them out. And that's different, somebody stopping somewhere and checking their phone for something and then putting it away again, from somebody that's walking along with their phone in front of them.
Now, the part of the reason I asked this question, and I'm absolutely certain that you've been camping more nights in your life than I. Let me think. In my life, I have probably been camping. This maybe would. What would you guess that number would be? I bet you I probably have a guess.
Five nights.
No, I would say it's
20?
I would say about between 20 and 25.
Oh,
I would
say that's many. Not bad.
Yeah, somewhere in that range would be my guess. Okay. And one of those days, I was at a beautiful state park about an hour south of here, near the confluence of the Wisconsin and Mississippi rivers. It's a beautiful state park in Wisconsin called Wyalusing.
Nope.
I bet you've been there.
I've been through it. I've never camped there.
Okay, it's a beautiful state park, and it's a little out of the way for some people, so it's never, like, packed with people. So it's a great place to go. But I was camping, and I was on my phone sitting on, and we have, like, a really nice camp spot or campsite that, like, overlooked this beautiful place. It was just, you know, it really could have been better. But I was on my phone, and I don't remember what I was looking at. But it was a similar situation. These people, I think, were talking to each other. But, you know, sometimes you're having a conversation with someone you're walking with that you hope is overheard. And they made that comment. In effect, like, look at that guy looking at his phone. Look at that beautiful view, you know, 10 feet behind him. But what I was thinking to myself was, I mean, A, they didn't know what I was looking at, of course, and nor do I remember. But let's say I was sitting in that same chair reading a book. Do you think that would have got that same response?
Not at all.
I don't think it would have either. And so why? And, you know, I'm pretty sure I was not, you know, using my phone as an e-reader, but I could have been. But I mean, I would also say this was also the time in the internet before, like, everything was video. So I was probably reading something. And, like, why do you think that, like, if I'm reading something online, whatever that something might be, is somehow seems to be less valued than like reading a book in that case. Why do you think people would say, oh, he's, gosh, that's a great way to spend a vacation, a beautiful day sitting in a chair with a beautiful view reading a book? That seems great.
I'm not sure. I if I had more time, I could think up the answer, but it lies somewhere in this.
Okay.
Like, I myself know the difference between those two experiences, and I would feel better about myself. Like, if I was to think, I'm going to go out today, I'm going to spend the day in nature, what am I going to do while I'm there? Going out, spending the day, sitting on a view, overlooking the river, reading a book is a very different kind of day than, oh, I'm going to go sit in a view overlooking the river and look at my phone. Those are two very different kinds of activities. And I feel like the experience of going out in nature and just looking at my phone is not that much different than just looking at my phone at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas like going out in nature, sitting there and reading a book is quite different. And I think in a way we're more present within our surroundings with a book than we are with digital devices. Digital devices occupy our attention in a different way, I think.
So you'll be spending some time out camping this season, right?
Yep.
And you have before. I'm sure there are places you go where cell service is like probably not around. Is that correct?
I try to go to those places. Okay. They get a little harder to find these days.
Let's say you are at a place that has okay cell service, and we'll set aside, there's no weather issues, you're not expecting a call from anybody, you're not expecting your podcast host to send you possible topic ideas, you're not expecting anything of interest to come along. Where do you put your phone and how often do you check it?
If it's a place where I think I might be wanting to take some pictures.
Okay, sure.
Or if I need a map for some reason, I've got, navigation or something on the phone, then I will carry it with me. It'll mm-hmm. be in my pocket. Otherwise, I'm leaving it, say, in the car. If I'm camping with a tent or a camper, usually I wouldn't leave it in a tent because it's not really secure.
Yeah,
I'd leave it like locked in the car or something. If I've got a camper, I'm going to leave it there. Yeah. I don't really want it with me. For one thing, I don't want the weight.
Yeah.
Like, I just get rid of anything extraneous when I'm going out hiking, when I'm going fishing or something like that. When I'm fishing, I usually take the phone because I want it in case I want to take a photo.
Mm-hmm.
And
But if you get that one fish that nobody believes you caught.
Yes. But then lots of times I catch that fish and like the phone's like in a pocket in my vest or something, and I'm fighting the fish and I can't get it out anyway without dropping it in the river. And so it just stays there and I never get the photo. And I just have to lie about the size of the fish I caught.
And then last question, do you, when you're out in these places, do you often bring something to read?
Yeah, I usually do.
Is what you would choose to read there different than what you would choose to read if you were just having a lazy weekend around the house?
Not really. Though I have a pretty large collection of outdoor books. About fishing and things.
Yeah, but I was wondering if that might be something you'd be more inclined to bring.
I am more inclined to bring that. I generally bring a number of books. But if I'm in the process, I'm already reading a novel, I'm going to take that,
I'm going to keep interrogating you. Radio, music, anything?
No.
No.
Okay. No radio or music in the car when I'm driving.
Sure. But some people
I'm not bringing one of those little speakers.
Yeah. Just have, and is that just because you don't want to bother the person at the campsite next to you?
Partly like that. But when I'm camping, I want the sounds.
Okay.
I want to hear birds and I want to hear other sounds.
They have CDs that just have that all built in, Rick. You can just have bird sounds and nature sounds. And like they could have like the brook in the background and frogs.
There have been times where I've gone on a solo hiking trip where, like, after a few days, I really miss...
After a few days?
Even after a couple of days, I'll really miss human voices. I wish I had one of those, like, little speakers or something. Or I might, if I've got my phone with me, I might like put on a podcast or something just so I can hear people talk. That's just like for a little bit. Usually, I'm pretty happy listening to the sounds. And what happens is it takes a while to get attuned to it. And then you start noticing things that you weren't noticing before. And you realize that you're becoming slowly attuned to the rhythm of things that's different than the rhythm of the clock. And that takes 3 days. That's why it's important to to spend a little time where you're not looking at a watch occasionally and, you know, checking email and all those things. You're just paying more attention to the sun and shadows and things like
that. Well, as spring is coming, in some parts of this country especially, there could be people right now listening to this podcast on one of those hikes or around a campfire or who knows, right? They could be listening to us right now. You're not going to tell them to put their turn off their put this podcast, are you?
Listen to the podcast when you're in a car or inside, but then go out for a walk and notice, for example, like if you're in, like we are in Wisconsin right now, walking the other day before sunrise, I heard mourning doves, the first ones I've heard this year. So that's how I know that they're back. They've just migrated back into the area.
It's funny, I was listening to one of my favorite baseball podcasts, and they do a mailbag question occasionally, people calling or writing in with questions about the team. But one of them, before the question, mentioned that they had just gotten back from climbing Mount Everest, which is like a big deal. And I don't know how long it takes. It obviously takes a while. And they had listened to this baseball podcast. They had saved up a bunch of episodes and were listening to it as they were climbing Mount Everest. So it made me think to myself, I wonder where some of the strangest places people have listened to our show. Because, I mean, you always think about people in their car or on a walk. And, I mean, obviously that happens a lot. But there's probably times where, like, there's been people who've been doing... they also talked about how they heard from somebody who, a woman was listening to the podcast as she was going into the birthing process to keep her mind, redirect her thoughts a little bit. I guess she needed her attention on something else.
Yeah. So if anybody listening has been doing something really interesting and positive that they want to tell us about,
you can find me on Twitter.
Yeah. But there's other kinds of things that you might have been doing you don't need to mention.
You don't need to mention those. That is very true. This is, after all, a podcast about ethics. As a reminder, the Ethical Life podcast is a production of Lee Enterprises. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And also, be sure to check out Rick's column, which covers many of the issues we spoke about today, and that can be found on all Lee websites. For Rick Kite, I am Scott Rada. Thanks for listening.